Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger-Miles, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host and partner in crime, Miss Sandy Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
yeah, I don't know. Every week you ask me that, and I'm like, it's just another week.
It's February.
Oh, but my mom got my mom a COVID vaccine appointment. So Woo-hoo! That's been the big news in my world. It's really like disheartening how hard like you have to, like, my mom is not internet capable. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what she would do if she did not have like an internet savvy daughter to like refresh websites in the middle of the night for her. Like she would just be, it would be a mess. But anyway, that's the happy news from my
that's great
corner of the world.
So what are we talking about today?
And he's like, please stop talking about your weird family.
No, it's fine.
What are we talking about today? Oh, well, we are talking about yet another reason for me to feel thousands of years old. I am truly Moral of the Ancient One from The NeverEnding Story. Because did you know, dear listeners, that Downton Abbey, the gateway drug for many of you, I assume, into the world of British television and period dramas and, you know, Maggie Smith, it's 10 years old.
Yes, it turned 10. Actually, technically, it turned 10 on January 9th. That was the premiere, January 9th, 2011. And I was thinking we were going to be all clever and be doing this, you know, right on the time that we got the finale. But I forgot that season one, when it first aired over here, they smashed it down into 4 episodes instead of 7. So technically, we're a touch late on this, but that's okay.
No one would have known that if you hadn't told them.
Well, I do think it's important, though, that we remember that PBS so didn't think this show was going to work that they smashed it down from 7 episodes to 4.
That's actually true. I can vouch for this, because the other reason I feel 1,000 years old is, y'all know we are a podcast produced by a local PBS station. Shout out to WETA in Washington, D.C. And I started working at WETA right when Downton came out, like in the fall of that year. And like Downton has no doubt changed like the way that people think about British TV, but it's also really changed the way a lot of people think about PBS. And like suddenly my job got really cool. Like, it was, I mean, not my job is cool all the time, but like people are like, oh, what how long was Downton Abbey on? 6 seasons?
It was on 6 seasons up until 2016.
For 6 years. Every time you guys know that we live in the DC area, and the biggest question that you get when you live here, or at least in the before times when you did things like go to bars, is what do you do? So I would tell people that I worked at a PBS station, and the first question I got, let me again stress this, for 6 years, was what's going to happen on Downton Abbey? Now, I don't work for the station that makes Masterpiece. The show is made in England by a different network. I have no idea what's going to happen on Downton Abbey. I got this from relatives. I got this from friends. I got this from strangers at bars. And it was just like, it's hard to overstate like the scope that this thing became for PBS and the PBS system. And I can tell you that at the time, everybody thought the hit would be something most of you probably don't even remember got made. Remember when they tried to reboot Upstairs Downstairs with Claire Foy?
Yes, I do.
That was the show everybody thought was going to hit. That's the show that got the primetime, like, fall placement. And it was Downton. And it literally, like, Downton Abbey changed my life.
Downton Abbey also, in two ways, also, it changed my life, which I'll tell you in a second. But it also changed the way that PBS does their scheduling. Because up until then, fall was the big slot. And nowadays, It's January. All creatures great and small, the big show that everyone expected to hit, didn't come in the fall. It came in January. Victoria came in January. Sanditon came in January.
It actually really became counter-programming for stuff like the Super Bowl.
Yeah. This
year, the Super Bowl did horrible in the ratings, but you know what was number two? Was PBS Sunday Night.
Yeah. Like, it changed the way that PBS stations think about programming, which I find to be, like, to me, that's so huge. I mean, honestly, Downton Abbey also changed my life in that, like, I was basically an administrative assistant / office manager in a little company that will go unmentioned. And I basically, like, blogged on the side when I was bored. And I did a little post called The Hats of Downton Abbey, in which I just ranked a bunch of hats from season one because I massively loved the costumes. And, you know, I had a degree in theater and I loved costume design. And yeah, that blog took off to the point that, like, I now write for a living.
I mean, it honestly, like it really did make PBS and working for PBS and being part of public media, like, really a cool thing. Yeah. Like, I saw Dan Stevens, who plays Matthew Crawley on the show, right after he left Downton, he did a play in New York. He did a revival of The Heiress. And I saw it because I'm a theater nerd in addition to being a PBS nerd. And I stage doored and I got my program signed. And I was like, Dan Stevens, thank you for making my job cool again. He's actually really hot in person, guys, just so you know.
You know, the thing is
his American accent was not great. But that's, like, the one critique that I have.
You know, the thing about Downton Abbey is that, like, honestly, like, and here's my big old hot take that, like, everyone's going to hate me for. But honestly, like, as Downton went on, though, I honestly began to feel like it never should have become a massive series the way it did. And
here's my hot take, which I will top this.
Oh.
I think it should have ended after season three. I think instead of killing off Matthew, they just should have ended the show. It was the best the show ever was. And it was still very enjoyable afterwards if you ignore the whole, like, Bates getting charged with murder plot. I don't even know what that was. But, I mean, it did, the later seasons did give me Carson, Mrs. Hughes, for which I am eternally grateful. But, like, the peak of that show was season two and three, and instead of killing off Matthew, they just should have ended it.
That's funny, because I actually think the peak of it was season one. And partly season two. I did love season two. And I loved season two because I love, like, World War One stories. And at the time, World War One was still not a thing that we talked about a lot because we hadn't gotten to the centennial was in 2014. And that's when you began to get a lot of World War One stories, like, in media. But up until then, World War Two was the big war that everybody did. And so seeing World War One done in a series quite like this was really great. And I loved that. But the thing about season one that I just loved in a way was that it wasn't a day-to-day story. It spanned several years. It basically starts with the sinking of the Titanic and it ends with the beginning of World War One. And it's basically like you don't care about what these people do day-to-day because their lives are so dull. It's like a rock skimming. No. You know how you skim a rock across water and it sort of pops on the water and then pops back out and pops in the water? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it felt like. You skimmed a stone over the story of the Crawleys and sort of got, like, flashes of their lives in this world while skipping all the boring day-to-day stuff. And the thing that really sort of began to kill the series for me was in season three when we started to go day-to-day. And it stopped being this sort of skimming of history the way it had been in those first two seasons.
Oh, that was never what this show was about for me.
Oh, okay. What was it about for you?
But the show for me was about Matthew and Mary.
Oh, really?
Like, that was the whole, that was, I mean.
Well, that makes sense why you would think that it should end then at the end of season three. Okay.
Yes. I mean, even though I really did like, oh my gosh, there's so many Matthews. Matthew Good?
Yes. Matthew
Good. The guy that's currently smoldering in A Discovery of Witches.
Oh my gosh.
Which maybe we should do an episode on at some point. I freaking love that show.
Speaking of him, I had forgotten that, like, he actually also was in the Brideshead Revisited revival before that. That's where he
came.
Oh
yeah, the one with Ben Whishaw.
Yes. I kind of forgot.
I also
that.
love, but that was that That one wasn't very good. No. So I think it's really okay if you forget that Pride's Head doesn't exist. And I say that as somebody who loves Ben Whishaw, but I've watched him in some terrible things for that love. So
yeah.
Anyway, what was I going to say? I feel like I think that's interesting that you looked it down into sort of like this historical time capsule show. I was like, no, this is like a soapy shipper show. That's what this show is about. That is its bread and butter. And that is, for me, where it fits in this sort of period drama genre. For me, it's, you know, I love North and South, which is also a historical kind of show, but it's really about the romance at the center of it. And I feel like Downton knew that, which is why it was constant. I mean, there's Matthew and Mary, Bates and Anna, Carson and Mrs. Hughes, like even Lord and Lady Crawley, Edith and her millions of terrible suitors.
Poor Lady Edith. Can we have a moment of silence for poor Lady Edith? My God.
Hey, she ended up being like a duchess or something. Her life is fine.
That's true. And Lady Sybil is the one that really got the short end of the stick.
I know, right? I mean, props to Jessica Brown Findlay for being like, to some extent, I do really respect both her and Dan Stevens for being like, you know what? We put in our time. We did our 3 years. We are going to go do other things. And we don't want to wear, well, in her case, I guess, corsets for the rest of our lives. But and I love her because she went on to make one of my favorite episodes of Black Mirror and also Harlots, which I really will bring back onto this podcast in any conversation at any time for any reason. But,
you know, the thing is that the thing is with Jessica Brown Findlay, though, is that when she left, she didn't hit massive A-list. She went and she did fun projects that clearly appealed to her.
Yeah. We just won't talk about that Brave New World remake.
God, that was terrible. But I feel like she probably signed on for that because she thought it was a really cool concept, though. Like, I feel like all the projects she takes because they are something that appeals to her in some way. Like Harlots, for instance. Whereas Dan Stevens, when Dan Stevens left the show, everyone thought that, like, you know, he was basically doing David Caruso's career. Right?
Like, no, I actually think I was going to save the talk about what they're doing now until after we talked about the show some more. But I think Dan Stevens, hands down, has the best career out of any of them.
Oh, my God. Amazing. What he has done with his career is just, I mean, honestly, it should be studied.
Is it George Clooney that always says something to the effect of, like, he makes these big, like, sort of tentpole blockbustery movies so he can make weird Coen stuff on the side?
Yes,
but it's like that. Yep. Like, he made a live action Beauty and the Beast so he could spend 3 years making Legion.
Yeah,
which
absolutely, like,
is a fantastic show,
and honestly I feel like Dan Stevens has also been the inspiration for those who leave shows after three seasons, like, say, Grant Chester.
Like
James Norton totally wants to be Dan Stevens, right? But honestly, like, going back to the actual show itself, yes, I thought of this as a historical time capsule. Season one to me very much was that. It really captured the Edwardian look and feel of the time. It captured the very tail end of a world that we only really ever read about in books that just does not exist anymore, right? And, like, it also kind of, like, tracks back a little bit to, like my grandmother was basically a daisy in a giant household when she was a teenager. Like, that's what she did for a living when she was that was, like, her first job. So also it's a little bit about seeing a history that, like, and in a way, like, especially season one felt a little more realistic about that history, and how people were cruel and people were kind of, like, I'm thinking of you know, O'Brien, and I'm thinking of Barrow.
Oh, O'Brien.
Right? Like, I'm you know, that these people weren't, like, by the time we get to the movie, you know, we have the sort of frolicking servants.
Let me put a pin in that for a second. It'd be like, O'Brien legit let her boss slip on a bar of soap. That is a soap opera move.
Yes.
That is some soapy, I was going to say a word that Mark would have to bleep. Like, that's not historical times capsule. That's, like, that's full-on Stefano D'Amara. So.
Yeah, and it's things like that I sort of just let go.
I say this as someone who loved Days of Our Lives. Like, Marlena getting possessed was, like, the greatest summer of my life. But, like, you know, I think it's just, you have to be honest about what the show knew what kind of show it was. And while that other stuff is nice, like, I think if you asked the people that made Downton, that would perhaps be their aspirational answer, but it wouldn't be the truth.
Oh no, and clearly by season three, when we started to get to the day-to-day stuff, they lend and you know, Bates being arrested, and then I believe what was it season five where Anna gets arrested? Like every year, like it feels like Bates just keep going to jail, right? Like clearly this was.
I still am never gonna be. One of the things I will never forgive that show for is the whole Anna gets raped subplot. Like, ugh. No, hard pass.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, especially once Matthew was dead, like trying to basically give Lady Mary a redemption arc, because in a way she had become sort of like, it was very clear that Julian Fellowes, who created the show, loved Lady Mary and did not care that she was rhymes with witch. And in fact, kind of reveled in that, and that he kind of had to find a way back from that when Matthew died, because she couldn't be that in a new love story. Like, that didn't work. And I think that actually that's one of the things that sort of kept me going at that point, was watching the pivot in the series to basically like keep going without him and to keep going without the Mary and Matthew central pair. And honestly, I feel like Matthew leaving also helped the show go three more seasons, because you think that it should have ended with season three. I can't imagine what season four would have been with Matthew. Like, I can't imagine where they would have gone. Like,
I think they would have had to.
They would have had to break them up, and I don't know what.
No, I don't actually think that. I think they would have had to naturally pivot to other characters. I think had Matthew stayed, Mary would have, by necessity, become less of the unifying force that the show revolved around. Maybe Edith's life would have not sucked so much.
Maybe.
Like,
I mean, poor Edith.
I know, poor Edith. But Laura Carmichael has done very well for herself since then, so props to her.
And in fact, she's narrating the nature documentary I've been watching the last Aww. Couple of weeks over on BBC America.
And I really liked her in The Spanish Princess.
Oh, gosh, she was great.
She was a very good Maggie Plantagenet.
Yeah, I'm happy to see her get more work, and you know, I'm happy to see all of them get work. Honestly, like,
I know, I feel very weirdly, and I think this is just because Downton itself played such a large part in sort of my professional life for so long. It's like I feel weirdly like protective of them. Like I want them all to succeed and do great stuff, and just fly.
Yeah,
I
would agree. And like, there's definitely a level with where I understand why Dan Stevens left and why Jessica Brown Finlay left, because they wanted to not be typecast into these roles for the rest of their lives. And one of the things that sort of happened to the rest of the cast is that they are constantly fighting to find a way out of being typecast in those roles for the rest of their lives. And I think that's one of the reasons why I loved Laura Carmichael in The Spanish Princess, is because she found a way to not be Lady Edith. And I Hugh Bonneville in Paddington found a way not to be, and yet sort of still kind of, you know,
I think Hugh Bonneville has the benefit of having a much longer career than a lot of the younger actors that were connected to the show. So I think a lot of casual American viewers definitely like look at him and they're like, oh, that dude from Downton Abbey. But he's got like decades of work other than this. So I think it's easier for him.
Yes.
Also, he's a man and this is a sexist industry.
It's true. I mean, Jim Carter is another one who had a very long career. So it's easier to see him outside of Mr. Carson, you know, like, honestly.
And isn't he married to Imelda Staunton?
Yes, he is married to Imelda Staunton, which is how come she's now a character in the series, which I just love that. I mean, seriously, you know what, guys, do that. Totally just get your whole family in there, you know, spread the work around. I love that.
I mean, also, I love her.
And like Penelope Wilton, like I had seen Penelope Wilton.
Penelope Wilton will be Harriet MP for the rest of her life to me. Harriet Jones MP for the rest of her life to me. Like that was who she was before she even got on Downton. I was like, oh, we know who you are.
Actually, for me, the first thing I ever saw her in, she starred as Annie in the Norman Conquests, in a televised version of the Norman Conquest, which is a really, really cool stage show, which is three stage shows in one, where they basically do the same day from three different rooms. It's really cool, really, like, I don't know, it's a really cool show. Anyway, but to me, she's always going to be Annie forever and ever.
I mean, I'm sure I've actually seen her in things other than Doctor Who, but she is Harriet Jones MP to be forever.
And, you know, the thing is that, like, as much as I say, you know, I would have been happy with Downton Abbey ending after season one, you know, there are so many other actors who kind of got into the show afterwards that I would have been sorry to miss. Like Kevin Doyle, for instance.
Oh, love him.
Yeah.
He also seems like the nicest man. Like, truly.
I do pity Lily James that she sort of got the Cousin Oliver.
That's another one whose life has, her career has, she has done fine for herself.
She really has done fine
She's
for
probably
herself.
Like the second most successful person behind Dan Stevens.
I would agree with that, yes. You know, and even people like Rose Leslie, who was only on for a season, you know, like she.
Aww.
But then, you know, she went.
She married. Then she married Jon Snow.
Yeah, she went. She went and did Game of Thrones and had a spectacular death. So, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to fault her. Ian Glen is another one who came in. I guess he came in season two and was gone by season.
Oh,
four?
Yeah, Jorah Mormont.
Yeah. He was only season two though, wasn't he? Did he was gone by season three? I think.
I don't remember.
I forget.
It's funny how, like, I have very vivid memories of certain moments from Downton, like the Matthew and Mary getting engaged in the snow in the season two Christmas special. Like, kill me. It's so perfect. And, like,
I picture him upside down bleeding from the head.
Ew, rude.
I mean, that really was such a shocking moment, though. Like, because, and especially because, you know, that Dan Stevens, at least we know now that Dan Stevens actually asked Fellows not to kill him off, that he wanted to be free, but he didn't want, he just wanted to go away to America or something and not be killed off. And instead, and Fellows got so mad at him basically for quitting his show that he said, no, screw you, and murdered him in a car.
I mean, yes, and it was like definitely we saw the body dead,
right?
Too. Like, not like no body, no crime. TM Taylor Swift.
That was some straight up like a writer murders character because they're mad at actor moment. Like, and I think that also sort of lent to the sort of shock of it. You know, I other images that come to mind immediately. I mean, there's Lady Edith and coming back with the baby.
Hated that storyline.
That terrible storyline of her basically like not being able to leave the baby alone and it being really painful.
Did she have an affair with the farmer?
No, she never had. No, she didn't have an affair.
They had like an uncomfortable. Close
yes
thing.
They had an uncomfortably close thing, but it was really for her, it was all about the baby. It really wasn't about anything else.
Her name was Marigold.
All right, that's right. Her name
the
was-
things I remember, like, seriously. Although for me the big well, yes, Matthew and Mary in the snow, literally anything Violet Crawley chooses to do is burned in my memory forever. I am truly grateful. I've loved Maggie Smith for years and years. I loved Maggie Smith for years and years prior to her ever being part of the show. And I have to admit that it makes me happy that she became basically a household name because of playing Lady Violet. And I mean, we have like tote bags with quotes from her on them at work. And she's just like she's really just my life goals, basically. And I also have to say that I always loved Maggie Smith for never once showing up to the Emmy Awards. She got nominated, I think, like every year she played Violet.
Yes.
And she was just like, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
I think she even won a couple of times in there. And she's just like, I don't need your award shows, American.
Well, I think it's also
I love her so much. So much I love her.
I think she's one of those actors who like had such a low key career up until Downton. And it was also it wasn't just Downton, it was the one two of Harry Potter and Downton, like back to back, that really sort of shot her to fame. So I think there was a level where she was just like, I am not dealing with any of that. Why would I deal with that? Why would I walk a red carpet? Screw that. Right? Like, I think that was the London season Christmas Christmas special is another one that really comes to mind when I try and think back of like my favorite Downton moments. Even though that's kind of a weirdly uncomfortable one, it's the only time that Downton really like got into the whole like, let's deal with the fact that we are actual like, you know, part of society and royalty rather mm-hmm. than just sort of being like a unit inside the house.
Is that the one where Rose like meets the Prince of Wales or
yes,
something?
Basically. Like, well, I mean, that's of course that I mean, honestly, like that's what a season is. I mean, we just saw that in it basically in Bridgerton, right? Like basically, you know, even though Bridgerton
well, no, doesn't she like help him dodge some scandal?
Yeah, isn't, like they had
yeah,
the, of
that's
course
a
because
really
they couldn't,
weird
because
like,
they couldn't just have like it be a normal season thing of like bowing to the queen and the queen like, you know, kissing someone else and saying you are the incomparable of the season and moving on, right? Like Rose had to like the grand
like the hijinks of that was weird to
yes
me.
It really was it was an odd episode, but I still loved it because it really helped set the Crawleys among their own in a way that I felt that the show didn't do a lot and the show wasn't really interested in doing in a way.
The show, Lord help me, you know I love this show, but the show had some interesting It made some interesting choices in later seasons. I will say one more really happy memory before I go on to side-eye something, and that is, was it at the end of season 3, I think, where Carson and Mrs. Hughes, like, they go to the beach?
Yes.
And they, like, hold hands and wade into the ocean, and I was like, this is so romantic! I love them so much! They were always my second favorite ship, and I'm really glad that I got that by the end.
That's the one where the family goes to, like, I think that's the end of season 5, I want to say.
I don't know.
The family goes shooting, and the servants stay at home, and that's how come they get to go to the beach.
I don't remember what season it was, but I distinctly remember Mary's outfit, like, from that episode when they all went shooting. Like, her outfit was really great. She had, like, a cute little newsboy cap kind of thing on. Anyway,
when Mary gets the bob.
Oh, yeah, because she's a modern lady. Although, to be fair, like, when I had a bad breakup, I, like, cut all my hair off, so I get it. But, what was I going to say? I think the real reason why I can't, like, jive with your whole, like, Downton is this time capsule history thing is that this show, God love it, had the most ridiculous conceptions of like social issues that I have ever seen. Like let's talk like this is at its worst in the movie, but this is literally a thing that runs through the whole show about how happy all the servants are to be like slaving away for these jerk masters all the time. Like they want to work more. They're so into working.
Yeah.
Like that's like I said, that's at its ultimate worst in the movie, but that's like a theme that runs throughout it. Remember when they tried to like be like Downton explores racism?
Oh God.
Yeah. I know you probably blocked a lot of that out because it was terrible when they made Rose like fall in love with that jazz singer.
Yes, I did.
Which is just like the show is so clunky whenever it tries to do anything serious that I'm just like, can we just go back to like kissing in the snow?
Honestly, like, I think that's also something about, like, that really reflects Julian Fellowes' values.
Who is, by the way, a peer. Let's not forget.
He is a peer. He is a lord. He is a royalist. He is a he is deeply conservative. And I mean, the Downton Abbey itself is kind of a pastoral, like, you know, fairy tale of the benign lord and who cares so deeply about those who are in his care, right? When we know that that's not real. We know that's not the truth. And you know, the pastoral, as I said, the happy frolicking servants. I mean, that's not real either. And I liked it as a history thing when it sort of skimmed across history and dipped in and out, because that you also those points didn't feel as central because you were sort of skimming across their lives. And once it became a day-to-day thing, you couldn't avoid that kind of that was the attitude that was basically being handed to you every week. Though honestly, like, it's also part of the reason why the show was popular is that it gave this sort of, you know, fairy tale version of history so that, you know, people
I do truly blame Downton for every show coming after it I'm looking at you, Victoria, suddenly deciding that, like, they needed to have, like, a downstairs plot line.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they needed to, like, show us the lives of the servants. But they never figured out how to do it the way that Downton did it. And maybe the way that Downton did it was to just straight up lie. I don't know.
I mean, that's part of the problem with Victoria really wants to be more truthful about it. So it has like the lady's maid who sells the gloves and it has like the servants who thieve. And people don't want to see
like
that.
Belgravia does that too.
Yeah.
Another Julian Fellowes show, which is at least a little bit more honest about it because all of the house servants are busy like selling family secrets to like other people and whatnot, but it's there's so much about Downton that's like lightning in a bottle, but that is one of the biggest pieces of that for me, and I truly do blame Downton for a decade of shows trying to make me care about like kitchen maids when really the better story is happening upstairs, but they felt like they had to try to do this dual thing. Which, to be fair, Downton ripped off from Upstairs Downstairs, but still.
But also, like, as you said, it's lightning in a bottle. If Downton came 5 years later, it wouldn't have worked. If Downton came 5 years earlier, I don't think it would have worked either. It also was a product of exactly when it arrived. I mean, if you put out Downton today, people would be like, this is sexist, this is classist, this is racist. Like, you know, you couldn't do that in a way. Because there's a level where that's not, it's not quite as socially acceptable to present that in this fairy tale manner.
I don't know that I agree with that because plenty of people still watch Downton.
Oh, no,
right
I
are
I,
watching Downton right now.
I think it would not have been quite the critical darling, is maybe a better way of saying it. Then it probably still would have been popular, but I feel like when it landed, that there was a level of acceptance of its blind spots that I'm not so sure would pass muster.
I don't know if I agree with that because I look at all the shows that have come after it, and so many of them have the exact same blind spots. They just don't handle them as well. Like they're not as good at telling the story. Enough to make you ignore the I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I don't know that I think that's giving us a lot of credit now that I don't think we deserve.
Okay.
It's only been 10 years.
I can absolutely accept that. That I'm giving everybody too much credit.
And to be honest, that like the key to Downton, despite its blind spots and foibles that a lot of shows that came after Downton that tried to be another Downton forgot, is that Downton is just good. Like, it's a good story.
Yeah.
It's a good story with characters you can invest in who have relationships that are meaningful, who give you, you know, things to root for. And like I said, I fully believe in my heart this is a story about the relationships at the center of the show and nothing else. And if you can get that right, people will forgive a lot of other things. And I just think, as much as I love, you know, Victoria, like there are elements of that are just like not a good story. Like all the downstairs stuff, it's just not a good story. So like if you can, like, it was good is the thing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like Fellows was pulling from what's the movie that has Maggie Smith in it that he did before?
It is called Gosford Park.
Thank you. I could not come up with the name of it. Thank you.
I'm here for your Maggie Smith needs.
Thank you.
World.
I feel like basically Fellows looked at Gosford Park, which is one of his most perfect stories, and was like, how do I spin this into a series?
Oh, it's, yeah, 100%. Like, Gosford Park is a perfect distillation of everything that works about Downton in, like, 2 hours.
And I feel like that also is part of the problem, is that he's not willing to just continually make... What he's trying to do with things like Belgravia is he's trying to move forward with it, but you can't move forward from perfect.
Yeah. Also, I mean, Belgravia is based on a book also called Belgravia that Fellows himself wrote. So I don't think there was a lot of like death of the author happening here.
Yes, that would...
And also, again, it's not good. Like, yep. It's boring. The good part of the story of Belgravia is the part that happens in the first 20 minutes. Like, that's what they should have made the show about instead of all the boring crap that comes afterward. Like, it's not good.
And it's the it the thing about Down is it's also filled with small good stories. Like, even if you get frustrated with Anna and Bates and the continuous going to jail.
Oh, 100%. I know a lot of people just straight hated Mary.
But like think about like Mosley and Daisy. Right? Like, and how
I got
Daisy.
So frustrated with Daisy.
Right?
Just
like,
go live a nice life on the farm with that nice old man who wants to be your dad. Stop trying to date the help. I mean, it's true. Like, the one flaw of Downton that it really felt the need to pair everyone off was always exhausting to me. I was like, there are ways that these characters can have lives that don't require them to, like, to end the series in a relationship.
Right? And, like, they even try to, like, do that with Barrow in the movie. Like, it's very, I'm curious what they'll do with the next movie, because of course at this point, like,
oh, of course they're gonna make one.
Yeah, like,
let's not even kid ourselves,
right? Like, it's an open secret at this point that there is a second movie coming. No one, it just hasn't been like formally announced yet.
Yeah, there's no way. That first movie made a crap ton of money.
Yeah, and it made a crap ton of money in a way that people did not expect it to. Like, I really, like, I was genuinely surprised how much money it made. And
you know what's funny, though, is that I'm trying to think. I have almost, like, the movie is perfect because the movie is utterly forgettable.
This is true.
Like, not in a bad way. I know I really liked the movie when I went to see it. I know I really enjoyed it. I know I thought it was better than I expected it to be, and I really liked it. Right now, sitting here thinking about it, I can't remember. I'm, like, face blind. What happened in the movie? I barely even remember. And that's maybe, like, the magic of it.
Amelia Staunton and Maggie Smith shared scenes together where they were catty at each other and it was fun.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was all I needed.
Yeah. Like,
it was like her daughter, her lady's maid was actually her daughter.
Yes, that was what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, honestly, like, it doesn't really matter what that plot was, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's that. Like, it was just like, I get to go back to this world and see these characters that I love again. And... like, Mary goes back to, like, Mary brings, like, Carson back to the house for, like, oh, the king visits. That's right. That's why the servants are so happy to work. I'm, like, literally talking myself into remembering this film. I've mostly forgotten almost all of it, but I remembered really liking it. So that's good.
The thing about Downton Abbey is that it's also about the house. And that, you know, the house is a central character in a way. And there's a level of just returning to the house, that moment where Carson walks back up to the house.
Oh, he's so purposeful.
Right? Like, it's not
even... I love Carson.
There's just something so, like, the romance isn't just the family and the relationships. It's also the house and how they all revolve around this house.
Last night I dreamt I went to Manderley again.
Right? But also, like, you know, there's a level where, like, this house stood before them. This house will stand after them. And they are simply the residents right,
like,
now.
Yeah, they're like the caretakers. Yeah. I get that. That house is pretty cool, though.
I think that there's a level where that having that grounding is also part of what makes Downton work. And
like, I have no idea what they would do in a second movie.
I don't either.
Like, no idea. I'm sure I'll see it.
Oh yeah.
I know I'll see it. It'll be great. I'm sure I'll like it.
I'll review it. But... I know I will. It doesn't matter. I'll go see it, but I have no idea what they'll do in it.
Well, I'm making air quotes. Go see it. Like, movie theaters. What? But,
well, I mean, if they start filming this year, it'd probably come out late 2022. So,
oh yeah, they'll save that for a holiday.
Yeah,
it'll be Christmas.
Yeah, and maybe by then we'll all have vaccines.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So, you know, with the last few minutes that we have with our time, like, we talked a little bit about Dan Stevens and how, like, amazing his career is. But I also, like, kind of wanted, you know, even Robert James Collier at this point has managed to, like, break out of the Barrow, you know, mold, I guess, and found work on Netflix.
Break out of the Barrow. That's funny.
I mean, honestly, though, like, there was a level where, how do you get another role after you've played kind of the evil butler for 6 years? Like, that's,
yeah,
really
hard.
You
just
hard,
have to be,
right?
The evil butler forever.
Yeah, and instead now he's the sword master at a school for fairies on Netflix.
Wait, oh my gosh, is he in that Winx Saga,
yes,
show? Oh, that's on my queue because that very much does look like it's my lane. Judge me. I watch good television too. But I'm not ashamed. I love Pretty Little Liars.
I mean, here I am admitting that I've watched Winx already, so I can't actually throw shade. But I will note that, you know, like, it's he you know, everyone has actually at this point managed to sort of break. Like, maybe Alan Leach is the only one I can think of off the top of my head. You know, I mean, Joanne Froggatt has done like so many good stuff on PBS, playing murderers who do belong in jail.
Yeah. She did a really good, like, Australia. She's done a couple of really good, what was it? It's like, it's just come to Sundance. Like, I think it's called The Commons.
Oh.
And it was, like, very sort of weird dystopia, like, climate change is ruining the country and the birth rate is down and she's trying to have a baby. It was really, like, it was good. She's done a lot of really different stuff. Like, she's been a serial killer, like, a Victorian serial killer. She's been dystopian mom.
Yeah, Daisy, Sophia McShera is her name. She was in Queen's Gambit this last year. You know,
I remember her mostly being the one of the evil stepsisters in the Cinderella with Lily James.
Phyllis Logan. She's also in Paddington. She does the Paddington TV series as opposed to the Paddington movies.
I'm not sure I knew there was a Paddington TV series.
There is a Paddington TV series.
That's adorable. But she's another person like Hugh Bonneville and like Jim Carter who has a career, and Maggie Smith for that matter, who has an extensive career that like predates the show.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's interesting that for me, like, Michelle Dockery has not. I thought Michelle Dockery would really have, like, a breakout career after this. And she had that TNT show. And other than that, I'm good trouble, good.
She was in Defending Jacob with Chris Evans on Apple TV Plus, which
they were very pretty together.
They were very pretty together. And that show was really, really weird. Godless. She was in Godless.
What is Godless? That's the Lady Western.
Yes, she's
been making some good, some interesting choices. I think she's also trying to do the Dan Stevens route of like making weird things, but like just none of them is super hit yet. I thought that show would hit the Lady Western thing, and it didn't.
I loved the Lady Western show, and I was super confused when like it went absolutely freaking nowhere. It did get a bunch of Emmys though, so you know, I mean, you know. Critics loved it anyway. And let's see, I'm trying to think if I've seen, now that you have said that, I cannot think if I've seen Jim Carter in anything. Nightfall. He was in Nightfall, which is kind of a British thing and really hasn't come over here.
Wait, is that the one where it's Nightfall but spelled like Knight of the Round Table?
Yes, exactly. It's one of those things that like hasn't been super big over here. And it's frustrating like to see like some of them not. Oh, Kevin Doyle is in Miss Scarlet.
Yeah.
There we go.
Keeping it in the PBS family.
You know, I'm really, really grateful for Downton. In a lot of ways, because, you know, I would not have a career writing. I would still be an administrative assistant somewhere in a place that we will not mention. But, like, I have to say, like, this is, you know, basically Downton and Game of Thrones together were basically the thing that, like, catapulted me into writing full time. And I'm very grateful for a lot of the shows that it spawned.
I really do think that the sort of period drama as a genre that people take seriously kind of is in a lot of ways due to Downton and due to its, you know, awards season success, to its popular success, to I just
slotted into the prestige TV world just right.
Like, I don't know if you get a Bridgerton or a Harlots if you don't get Downton first.
I don't know. You know, because I feel like there's a level where Downton probably would have been Downton, but not as big if prestige TV had not also been hitting right at that time. I really do genuinely believe that if it had not hit right when it did, it would not have been nearly as big or nearly as successful. And I stake something in that. Whatever I have to stake, I have a paperclip. I'm staking my paperclip.
She literally is. I can see her through the magic of Google Hangout.
It is one of the ones that my cats has totally destroyed again. Anyway, but yeah, like I'm very grateful for it, but I just don't know, like, if it could ever, I don't know if we could really ever get a show quite like that again.
I do. But I think that show would necessarily look a little different. But I do think, as someone who loves this genre of period drama specifically and sort of British programming overall, I think we have a lot to be grateful to Downton for. And it not only made my like professional life cool, it made my sort of non-professional life cool as well, because like I truly think that a lot of things that came after Downton that were popular that even only got made because of Downton. So I think it's important to recognize that it did change a lot about TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am happy for that.
Actually, you know what show we would not have had without Downton? The Crown.
That's 100% true.
Yeah. The Crown and Victoria are the two clear heirs to Downton that were made in the wake of it, inspired by it. And I, The Crown is just great. Like, Victoria frustrated me a lot.
I know. I like Victoria more than you do.
And if it ever comes back up, we have to do an episode where we argue about it.
Yeah. That's another one that I feel confident is going to come back at some point. I feel like...
Yeah, but Jenna Coleman's off doing other things first.
Yeah, but yeah, that's, I think she, because she keeps talking about it in interviews about how she wants to come back to it. So I think we will get to record that episode at some point. We are running a little long. So
as always,
happy 10 years, Downton Abbey. Thank you for a lot of things. And thank you for actually being a show that I can look back on with mostly fond memories, unlike the last time we did a 10th anniversary episode about something. So, yay. Downton forever. I can't wait for the second movie.
Me either.
I know. I probably will not remember it 2 years after I see it, but I'll truly enjoy it while it's happening. Anyway, Downton forever, the end. Annie, tell the people where they can find you on the interwebs.
You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find pictures of my adorable cats, hopefully not with paperclips, on my Instagram, which is also at Annie Bundle. Let's see. I am a staff writer at Elite Daily. I am a regular contributor to televisions.org. I also freelance around the web. So if you basically follow me on Twitter, you'll see all my bylines because I retweet them all. Right now I'm, recapping American Gods for AV Club. So yeah, just, check my Twitter and, click the links and be my friend. Thanks.
Yay. I'm her friend. But you should also be my friend. I am LacyMB on Twitter, LacyMB. I also write a lot here at Televisions and other places around the entertainment web these days, mostly about like WandaVision and Nancy Drew, because my Venn diagram of interest is vast and unending. I know, it's so good. If you don't want me or any of my entertainment takes, my cats are on Instagram. They're 6 months old now and currently pawing under the door while I'm recording. So I think that means they want you to follow them. They are Baker and Hammer. And the site and the pod also live on social media. We are Tele_Visions on Twitter and Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook. Televisions is brought to you by WETA. And if you like what we do, you can visit televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it. And you'll get to support public media, birthplace of things like Downton, at the same time. Yeah, that's us. If you have thoughts, you can send us an email at televisions@weta.org. If you are nice and have something, to say about what we're doing, you can leave us some reviews on the podcast app of your choice. And yeah, It is 2021, and I don't know. I feel like at the end of episodes, I'm running out of things to say, because I've been saying wash your hands and wear a mask and carry hand sanitizer with you everywhere. Still do all of that. Take care of each other. Take care of your older or more vulnerable relatives who may need your help getting them a vaccine appointment. It truly is oppressive how difficult this is to figure out in some states. So I hope yours is easier than ours is. And we will be back next week. See you soon.